ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. It's Christmas Eve, the 24th of December. I'm Annie Guest, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. Today, the final dash to Christmas Day is here, as parts of the country prepare to swelter, while a severe cold snap has some dreaming of a white Christmas. And Australia's Ukrainian refugees gather to remember their loved ones who'll spend another Christmas under Russian attack.
I'm very excited. We are coming together to celebrate Ukrainian Christmas in Australia. It's a very touching moment for whole Ukrainian community in Sydney.
First, some of the new protest and gun laws will come into effect in New South Wales today, after passing Parliament just hours ago. It comes as more details emerge of national gun and hate crimes registers. Meanwhile, community members and first responders who showed bravery during the Bondi attack could receive official recognition, with the Prime Minister writing to the Governor-General suggesting a special honours list.
The attack did show us the worst of humanity: hatred, anti-Semitism, violence. It also showed us the best of humanity: extraordinary acts of bravery and courage, acts of kindness for fellow Australians. And these awards would be announced in 2026.
Kathleen O'Connor reports on the latest from New South Wales.
In the wake of a tragedy and after a mammoth debate, contentious new laws passed through the New South Wales Parliament. Rod Roberts is the Deputy President of the New South Wales Upper House.
There are events which occur that mere words alone cannot begin to describe. Actions and hatred so far removed from our everyday life that our vocabulary falls short of describing them. But we must try. Mr. President, we must try because words have more than meaning, they have power.
Among the changes are greater powers for police to ban protests after a terror attack and tougher restrictions on gun ownership. Chris Minns is the New South Wales Premier and says the reforms are essential in preventing another Bondi terror attack.
These are extraordinary measures, I acknowledge that. I know that not all Australians that live in New South Wales support these changes, but we have decided it's the best way of ensuring we do everything possible to keep the people of New South Wales safe.
An alliance of activists and community groups have already flagged a Supreme Court challenge. Left out of the package were tougher laws on hate speech. They will now be examined by a Law and Safety Committee. Meanwhile, the federal government is trying to rebuild trust with the Jewish community at home and abroad. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has invited Israeli President Isaac Herzog to Australia.
I've written to the Governor-General and asked for a formal invitation to be granted by the Governor-General, because head of state to head of state is the appropriate protocol for the President to visit Australia in early 2026.
Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has blamed Anthony Albanese and his government for the shooting and for failing to address rising anti-Semitism. Executive Council of Australian Jewry CEO Alex Rivchin says the decision to invite President Herzog to Australia is a welcome step towards reconciliation.
His arrival here signifies that the relationship again is being resurrected beyond political or party or policy differences, that there's something much greater at stake and something far greater that binds the two countries.
But he says the Prime Minister needs to do more work to repair his standing among many in the Jewish community.
The fact that the federal government was so slow in responding and so ineffective, I think that many in the community will probably never forgive or restore their faith in this government.
Meanwhile, the coalition is continuing its calls for a royal commission. James McGrath is the Shadow Special Minister of State.
For 2 years, we have had a rising cancerous tide of anti-Semitism. For 2 years, we have had weak leadership by this federal Labor government.
So far, the federal government is still resisting calls, claiming it would take too long. But former Home Affairs Department Secretary Mike Pezzullo says it could be fast-tracked.
There's nothing to stop the Royal Commission being designed in terms of its letters patent to report more immediately. In fact, I'd report more quickly than the end of April, which is the Richardson deadline.
Claims Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke rejects.
I'm not sure if there's been a Royal Commission in history that has gone at the pace that he's just described.
Tony Burke has launched a national hate crimes database where authorities can flag individuals who've been convicted of hate crimes. It's been accelerated and is now online. He's also cancelled a British man's visa after he allegedly displayed Nazi symbols in Queensland.
Almost everyone on a visa is a good guest and welcome guest in our country. But if someone comes here for the purposes of hate, they can leave.
That's Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, ending that report by Kathleen O'Connor. There's more controversy surrounding the former Prince Andrew and the late convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. The latest tranche of Epstein files, released by the US Justice Department, contains what could be further correspondence between Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator. An email signed off A from Balmoral asks whether Maxwell has found any new inappropriate friends. The former prince was stripped of his royal titles earlier this year following scrutiny over his relationship with Epstein, as Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
The United States Justice Department has released tens of thousands more documents connected to Jeffrey Epstein, the late financier and convicted child sex offender. And once again, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is facing questions over his connection to Epstein.
Certainly the optics look very bad for Andrew.
Juliette Reedon is an author and the ABC's royal commentator. In the latest release of the so-called Epstein files, someone who refers to themselves as A at Balmoral Summer Camp for the Royal Family emailed the convicted sex offender and Epstein associate Ghislaine Maxwell in 2001, asking if she'd found them some new inappropriate friends. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, the brother of King Charles III, is a known friend of both Epstein and Maxwell, and Scotland's Balmoral Castle is a holiday residence of the British Royal Family. While Mountbatten Windsor has not released a statement and the ABC can't confirm the email came from him, Juliette Reedon says there's already clear evidence around his links to Epstein.
We can expect that that may well have been from Andrew, and if it is, it's just adding to what we already know about a very unfortunate and inappropriate relationship between Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted paedophile.
Formerly known as Prince Andrew, Mountbatten Windsor was stripped of his royal titles and removed from the Royal Lodge in October. The announcement was made by Buckingham Palace after sustained questioning over how long he'd maintained contact with Epstein. It also came after the publication of Virginia Roberts Giuffre's posthumous memoir, Nobody's Girl, which detailed three alleged sexual encounters with the then prince. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has long denied any wrongdoing. He paid Giuffre Roberts millions of dollars in an out-of-court settlement in 2022 after she filed a civil suit in New York. Juliette Reedon says despite severing formal ties, both Mountbatten Windsor and the royal family will continue to face scrutiny.
The big issue for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, as far as I'm concerned as a commentator, is that he has never presented himself to the police in America. He has never gone on file and talked to them about what he saw in Jeffrey Epstein's house. Of course, he is claiming that he did nothing wrong, and we have no evidence to say that he did anything wrong. That has not been tried in a court of law yet. And may well never be tried in a court of law. But he did see things. He was there. We know that anything that he says and saw could be useful to the police in America. And I think that's what he should be doing.
The latest release of the Epstein files is the largest so far, with one of the documents claiming US President Donald Trump shared a love of nubile young girls, which has now been deemed to be a fake by the FBI. Within the documents, there are many high-profile people photographed and named. Former state and federal prosecutor and former assistant US attorney David Weinstein says the documents need to be fact-checked.
Allegations are made, and unless they're substantiated, they're sometimes just not credible. And as astonishing as a statement might sound, you have to have corroboration, whatever side of the V you're on.
David Weinstein says that much of the onus on corroborating the Epstein files will fall on survivors.
They're the people who were there when things happened. They were the people who were called to testify in the criminal case, in the civil actions that were filed. They have the real answers.
That's former Assistant US Attorney David Weinstein, ending that report by Bridget Fitzgerald. Thanks for listening to The World Today on ABC Radio across Australia and on the Listen app. Subscribe to the podcast for all our stories. Just search for The World Today. As many Australians prepare to peel prawns with family and friends on Christmas Day, there's just hours left to secure supplies. And in New South Wales, it's the last hurrah for the Sydney Fish Market, which has remained open since 5 o'clock yesterday morning. Alison Shaw headed along to chat to shoppers.
At the Sydney Fish Market, shoppers like Denise are stocking up.
Sydney rock oysters, a couple of kilos of prawns and some scallops.
Yeah, so is this a ritual for you to come
here? Yeah, I've been coming here since I was a little girl with my dad.
The appetite for a seafood-filled Christmas remains strong.
Well, we come every year and we get prawns, what do we get, oysters, sometimes some smoked salmon. We watch the price go up by about 10% every year.
We've got about 5 kilos of prawns, 7 dozen oysters, 2 lobsters, a lot of sashimi, and not much money left.
Every year we do Easter and Christmas here, Christmas morning, every year to get the seafood for Christmas Day.
Tourists here for the first time are impressed.
I can't believe there's so many people at a fish market. I'm a fisherman at home and I've never seen anything like this.
It's very crowded, but I'm so very excited to see the big lobsters and crabs here and the seafood as well. It's a very new experience for me.
It's also the last hurrah for this Sydney institution, which first opened its doors almost 30 years ago. In a few weeks, the market is set to move into a new premises, a $700 million facility next door. These shoppers are making the most of this ending era.
I mean, we do it every Christmas Eve. How long have we been doing it for now, though? 20 years. Okay, 20 years. There you go. Yeah, so we made last year a bit of like a, this is going to be the last one, and now we're still here at this one.
Does it feel a bit weird to be here for maybe the last time?
It does actually feel really weird. You can tell everyone's kind of done and is ready to move into their new home.
Gus Janoon is head of operations at the Sydney Fish Market. He says the market's expecting to sell about 350 tonnes of seafood by the end of today as the bumper crowd continues to roll in.
I think it had a crescendo last night at between 9 and midnight. I think it was some similar conditions. We already hit 100,000, which is what our estimates were about 5 o'clock this morning. So well on the road to breaking those records again.
He says it's bittersweet to say goodbye.
I was here for the first 36 hours, about 30 years ago, and I'm here for its last. There's certainly a lot of nostalgia, a lot of memories. There were things that I'll miss a lot about this building we move on. I think for most of the tenants on the site, they too, they've obviously, their businesses have been built on this site. But we close one chapter when we move on and open a new one in the new building.
On the other side of the country, in Perth, the well-known Kalis family is running a 36-hour marathon event. Matt Kalis is one of the owners of the seafood business.
It is crazy, let me say that. We've got about 5.5 tonne of prawns here ready for sale. We've got all kinds of different fish here, from harpooka through to red emperor, pink snapper, plenty of salmon, barramundi. So a big variety of seafood down here.
And with Christmas Day temperatures expected to reach 40 degrees in Perth, he expects more shoppers to opt for the cooler food option of seafood.
We're anticipating about 5,500 over that 36 hours. We started at 6 a.m. yesterday. We'll finish at 6 p.m. tonight. Around 5,500 West Australians coming through the door.
The business is marking 100 100 years of operation, but preparing for this time of year is never easy.
Let me say, it never seems soon enough, but we get ready in June, end of June, beginning of July, and it seems like it seems like Christmas is a long way away until days like today and you realise, Jesus, I should have done this, I should have done that.
On the New South Wales North Coast, the line for a fresh catch is growing at Ballina, home to the big prawn.
We are getting 2 kilos of king prawns, 2 kilos of bugs, 2 dozen oysters and 2 dozen of scallops.
Local Elizabeth has been teaching her daughter Daisy the art of peeling prawns.
So you peel the head off first. Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
Peel the tail off.
Yep.
Then peel the body off.
Back at the Sydney Fish Market, Ariana and Anthony are counting down to tomorrow.
Well, we've got prawns,
oysters
unshucked. We've got sashimi.
Sashimi and big pieces of salmon.
Salmon fillets to grill. I'm like a little child when it comes to Christmas. You can probably see it in me now, buzzing around.
Yeah, no, he is. I do love Christmas. I mean, this year is obviously a little bit more somber after the events at Bondi, but. Yeah. It makes you realise also how important it is to spend quality time with family and your loved ones.
Shoppers at Sydney Fish Market. Ending that report by Alison Chow. In Tasmania, this Christmas is shaping up as one of the state's coldest on record. For some Tasmanians, there's a possibility of snow and hail delivering a white Christmas. It follows a cold spring, which has caused pre-Christmas havoc for the state's berry growers. Meanwhile, other parts of the country are set to swelter. Alexandra Humphreys reports.
Icy rain is already falling in central Hobart as Tasmanians prepare for the coldest Christmas in almost 2 decades. Shoppers are putting a positive spin on things.
Have a snuggly, warm Christmas inside.
That sounds cosy, actually. Something that we're not used to here in Australia, white Christmas. So it'd be really different, fun.
Christmas weather, it's not too bad.
You don't mind the cold?
I don't mind it.
A cold snap is expected to deliver snow to parts of Tasmania south tonight. Jonathan Howe is a forecaster with the Bureau of Meteorology.
Tasmania would very much be the coldest place in the country. So yeah, if you head up to sort of the Central Highlands, we will see a good chance of seeing some snow. Probably not more enough to sort of build a snowman, but certainly a bit of a white Christmas surprise for many people.
The last time it snowed at Christmas in Tasmania was 2006.
Snow on Christmas Day is pretty unusual but not unheard of. The benchmark snow sort of Christmas Day event was back in 2006 when we did see up to 20 centimetres of snow across some of the highlands.
The unusually cold weather is also causing havoc for berry growers. The weeks leading up to the festive season are a traditional boom time, but this year's cold spring has prevented fruit from ripening. Richard Clark is the owner of Westaway Raspberry Farm, which would normally have harvested 30% of its crop by now. Instead, only about 2% has been picked.
This is the latest season in 28 years of doing this. It's been a really terribly cold October, November and December, and that's meant that the plants have got lots and lots of berries on them. They're just green and not red.
The season is 3 weeks late. Richard Clark suggests Tasmanians may need to wait until New Year's Day to indulge in a berry-covered pavlova.
All our raspberries probably going to come on all at once, which is going to make for bountiful picking after Christmas. But again, that does miss the pavlova, the raspberry on the pavlova, unfortunately.
While Tasmanians rug up, those on Australia's west coast will be sweltering. Jonathan Howe again.
So at the other end of the scale, we are seeing severe heatwave conditions across Western Australia. We've got very high temperatures building across the west coast. Perth for Christmas Day is expected to reach 40 degrees, but further north, we are expecting temperatures to reach 43 and even 44 degrees across the western part of the Pilbara. And with that high temperatures also does come elevated fire dangers with extreme fire danger forecast for much of the west coast.
While the heat is uncomfortable, it's not unusual for Perth, which has hit 40 degrees on Christmas Day a couple of times in the past decade. Laurie Miller runs a bakery in Karratha in Western Australia's north, where temperatures are expected to climb over the next few days. He says when the weather is that hot, a swim isn't always the answer.
Well, I went for a swim down
the beach in Dampier yesterday, and certainly the water wasn't exactly cool. I can't say it was overly refreshing. It was like swimming in a hot bath.
A cold front is likely to bring relief across the west on Boxing Day. There's also a tropical cyclone warning for people on the remote Cocos-Keeling Islands in the Indian Ocean. And for parts of northern Australia, there's a chance of rain and possible flooding over coming days.
We have now seen the monsoon trough develop across northern Australia. So it is about a week earlier than usual, but it is bringing pretty widespread rain to parts of the Northern Territory and western outback Queensland. So ahead of rainfall, we have issued a flood watch for large parts of outback Australia, and that could cause disruptions to people who are travelling across central and northern parts of the country as we head into Christmas and also the New Year period.
That's Bureau of Meteorology forecaster Jonathan Howe, ending that report by Alexandra Humphreys. As Australians gather to celebrate Christmas Eve with friends and family, thousands of Ukrainian refugees are taking this moment to reflect. Almost 35,000 fled to Australia to escape the Russian invasion. For some, it's their first Christmas away from home. And reporter Miwa Bloomer spent time with them at a special dinner.
There's a bustle of activity in this Sydney kitchen. Pots bubble as staff put the final touches on handmade vareniki dumplings. They're one of a dozen traditional Ukrainian dishes to be served at this special Christmas feast hosted by Kyiv Social. There are around 80 diners here tonight. Many have come to Australia from Ukraine due to the war with Russia. Karina Sanja is the restaurant manager. She fled Ukraine when the fighting started more than 3 years ago.
Originally, I'm from eastern city of Ukraine, from Donetsk, but I was living at Kyiv for 8 years because unfortunately I had to leave because of the war my home in 2014, and in 2022 it happened again, and that time I came to Australia.
She lived in Australia for a year before getting her first job as a waitress, which helped her learn English.
It's when I came to Australia, I was completely lost before this restaurant. It was very hard for me to find a job, except that now my life completely changed.
For Karina, tonight is about bringing Ukrainian refugees together at a time when many are missing home. The 21-year-old designed the menu with her grandmother, who still lives in Ukraine.
When I told her that we would like to do Ukrainian Christmas dinner in Sydney, I asked her, what do you recommend? And we created together that menu.
Helping her is head chef and Ukrainian-Australian Raphael Geller.
I'll kind of put a little slight modern twist on a lot of things, just I can't not. But yeah, it's nice to actually be cooking for people from Ukraine, using recipes that are directly from Ukraine.
And while the food is important, Raphael Geller says tonight is about more than dinner.
What it can provide to people as well, the conversations, the love, I guess the sharing of connection.
The idea to hold this event came from Sean Christie David, founder of the Plate It Forward Hospitality Group, which owns Kyiv Social. He says the restaurant was founded to provide employment for Ukrainian refugees.
There was a lot of people that weren't getting access to work, so very highly skilled. I've got doctors, lawyers, engineers, economists, incredible people who work in our organisation now, but they were struggling to enter the job market because of lack of qualifications being recognised, the lack of English, and so many other barriers that they were facing.
Among the diners here tonight is Andrew McKinsky, president of the Ukrainian Council of New South Wales. He says celebrations like these are essential as the war grinds on half a world away.
Yes, we're tired. Yes, we're emotional. Yes, there is trauma for a lot of people. However, no one's giving up. No one ever will give up. And I think you'll find that spirit of resilience, that spirit of courage and persistence, that won't go away. Ukrainian Christmas is truly the most special night of the year. It is a night that is steeped in tradition. It is truly, truly a magical night.
Karina Sanjar hasn't seen her grandmother since she fled Ukraine. But tonight, she feels her presence, sharing her recipes with dozens of strangers.
It is very happy and sad because, unfortunately, she's not here. So it makes me a bit upset.
She says Christmas this year is particularly special.
I'm very excited. We are coming together to celebrate Ukrainian Christmas in Australia. Mostly our staff, they are all from Ukraine. So it's a very touching moment for whole Ukrainian community in Sydney. And I hope they will really enjoy our food, because my grandma created 12 courses menu.
Restaurant manager Karinya Sanja, ending that report by Miwa Bloomer. And that's all from the World Today team. Thanks for your company. I'm Annie Guest.